I hope that the glitches are taken care of. But the other thing that I'm requesting from Legislative Policy Committee is that we do an investigation. We find out why $65 million was invested in this program. It was not able to be up and running for people on the deadline that it was proposed for. Many Maryland families had received notice of cancellation of their coverage to conform with Obamacare. And so, in fact, you know, the exact opposite of what the stated goal of this was taking place. People were losing care, losing coverage. They were not able to keep some of their physicians and things like that. And then the so-called safety net that the government was creating failed. So I think we need to look into why that happened. The people of Maryland, the taxpayers particularly, have a reasonable expectation that, you know, what's going to be online by October 1 should have been online. And had there been problems, which obviously there were, people should have known about it ahead of time. Why is it that after that it was supposed to be functional, we then discover that there were some problems?
And this is more than just too many people applying all at once, right?
Oh, it's far more than that. The system wasn't capable of accommodating hardly anybody applying at all. And I think that the people reasonably understand that sometimes plans don't go as expected. But we would have thought that by July, August, September, there would have been a heads up. Look, we have some issues here. We need to push it back. There might have been some grumbling, but at least there wouldn't have been, you know, an unfulfilled expectation, which is exactly what Maryland payers were faced with.
Now, the governor said last week that there was some discussion, brief discussion, of delaying this, but ultimately they thought that would do more harm than good. I guess in hindsight, this should have been delayed.
In hindsight, it has been delayed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It has been delayed by default, and that's exactly what happened. The ironic thing is we have – this is exactly what some of the government shutdown in Washington was all about, was this thing's not ready to be operational. It's not ready for prime time, and we want to, you know, delay things and delay funding on it. All they were asking for in Washington was a one-year delay. And that didn't happen. Now we see the unfulfilled expectation, and we see it across the board. Remember, Maryland's political leaders got behind Obamacare lockstep.
Very early, too.
Very early, and there was very little resistance to what was going on. Look, I voted for the exchanges to be set up because we saw this train coming down the tracks. We wanted Maryland citizens not to be left behind if this was what was going to happen. Other states didn't implement it appropriately. But at the same time, this is one state that there was very little opposition to what was going on with things in Washington for political purposes. The Democrat leadership was railing behind it, was moving forward with it, and therefore it still failed. It still collapsed on its own weight and with an inability of the technology to play catch-up with.
Do you want to hear from the lieutenant governor, and what do you want to know from him?
Well, what was fascinating with the lieutenant governor is he was prepared to take all the accolades should this thing have succeeded. Then, when we find that it was a colossal failure, he then had excuses for it. This is a guy who wants to be the next governor of Maryland and is showing that he hasn't been able to operate this system. And more importantly, the buck rests with the governor. The governor finally stepped up to it. This is a guy who perhaps might want to be president of the United States someday. And, you know, we haven't exactly been encouraged by the successes that they plan to tout.
Ultimately, are they responsible? Isn't every lawmaker who voted to set up this exchange responsible? I mean,
well, I think that what the legislature did was grant the policy.
Right.
But the executive branch is charged with the implementation. The executive branch designed the contracts. Awarded the contracts through the Board of Public Works, and the responsibility rests with them. The legislature sets policy, but the executive branch is to carry all that out. And it's not to say there aren't glitches that come up everywhere we go. When you do transportation projects, healthcare projects, education systems, it doesn't matter. There are going to be glitches, but people would expect, you know, to know about it ahead of time and expect that it's also being dutifully addressed. You know, with this thing, it took people blind. It took the public blind. And there was this expectation that some people had that this thing was going to be able to transition off and be successful.
It's a colossal failure.
Congressman Delaney said last week that this is such a failure, and this is a Democrat saying it, the state should abandon its website, just go to the federal website, which has been fixed or is actually in better shape, his words, not mine, than the Maryland site.
Well, what I understand is that behind the scenes, Democrat legislators, and by that I mean congresspeople, U.S. senators, the federal legislators, are incensed by the way that this thing was incompetently handled and the embarrassment that it has.
I think they're also saying that publicly. I mean,
well, I can tell you behind the scenes what I understand is that let's just say that the words aren't printable. And because this could have been the model, and it was a colossal failure.
Let me move to some other subjects that will be taken up in the 2014 legislative session. I know that when I spoke to Delegate Kipke last week, they'd like to see a 10% income tax cut. I've heard talks about corporate tax cuts. What is on the Senate Republican agenda with respect to that?
Well, the important thing that you have is you have an election coming forward, so it's an election year. You also have the new census numbers, and or not the numbers, but the districts redrawn. So there's an incredible shift in the dynamic that's going on with that. So people would like to be able to deliver some type of tax reductions. God knows that this legislature and this governor has increased taxes, you know, many, many times over and over again. And so the money keeps rolling in, I guess, to quote the Evita song. But we're also finding that there are some deficits, that the structural deficit has not been corrected as was anticipated. So there are some tough decisions to be made. I would love to see some tax reduction, whether it becomes in the form of a income tax reduction, a corporate tax reduction, I don't know. I'm proposing, now this is just me personally, not as a member as minority leader, but I'm proposing a $25,000 exclusion from state income tax of any self-employed income, K-1 income. The idea here is to go to the smaller mom-and-pop businesses.
And those are the people who pay income tax rather than the corporate tax.
Exactly. The vast majority of smaller businesses have a pass-through type of structure so that any income, if they earn income in the business, because not all of them do, but should they earn an income, then it passes through as part of their state income tax and the county piggyback tax. So my proposal, and it's just to start the conversation, is to allow the first $25,000 of that to be free and clear of tax.
You know, I mean, politics, there is an election year and everything like that. What do you think is ultimately going to be the solution, I mean, is going to come out of this session?
I really don't know, kind of because a lot of the issues are going to focus also on the budget revenues, and the revenues are anticipated to continue to decline. We had a write-down in September. Right. We anticipate a write-down in December. And there will be one more revenue estimate in March. Exactly where that's going to go, no one can forecast at this point in time. So that'll be dicey. But at the same time, there has to be a recognition that we are losing jobs and employers, and therefore those private sector jobs to other states. You know, it's a multi-tiered effect. If somebody's going to create a business, I'd love for them to create it in Maryland. Mm-hmm. If somebody already has a business, I'd love for them to bring it to Maryland. But more importantly, we have to focus on the people that are already in Maryland and keeping them in Maryland. And, you know, for some aspects, there's an incentive not to be here.
The minimum wage has also been discussed, and I've even heard deals being made, business tax cuts in exchange for raising the minimum wage. Well, I tell you think that's not a good idea.
Well, that was one conversation. Let's do a corporate tax cut in exchange for raising the minimum wage. Again, this is a policy decision that probably will be passed at Annapolis, which puts Maryland at a competitive disadvantage. And particularly when you're dealing with some of the rural areas, as I represent, in Frederick and Carroll counties and western Maryland, the Eastern Shore, why would we want to do that to those type of employers? Furthermore, whether people choose to acknowledge it or not, a tremendous number of these minimum wage jobs are given to students, part-time employees, summertime work, and many of these people, particularly, you know, my daughter, you know, when she gets her job, I take care of her at home. So some of these kids are still staying with mom and dad over home, so it's not like we have an issue with the living wage.
But then there are others who say, you know, they're trying to raise families on the minimum wage jobs, the fast food workers and such.
Well, that goes to the symptom of a bigger problem that we have, and that's that someone's trying to raise a family without any type of marketable job skill. So now we have to artificially increase the cost of their labor. I don't think that's the proper solution, but it may be the political solution offered in Maryland. Here's something for your listeners to pay attention to. in North Dakota. And I don't really have a burning desire to go to North Dakota. It's pretty darn cold this time of year.
But it's very low unemployment. There's
very low unemployment. Boom. There's a job boom because of fracking and the mineral extraction going on in the ground. And a worker going into a McDonald's earns $15 an hour because that's what they have to do. That's what they have to pay from a market rate to get people to come in and flip burgers or serve them. And again, that's not to denigrate people that are working at McDonald's, but the fact is that's what the economics dictates up there. And here what we're trying to do is raise the floor. Some people will not have a part-time job.
What about the fact that Montgomery County and Prince George's County raised the minimum wage on their own? Should it be, and one of the things that Speaker Bush told me yesterday is that perhaps the state can set some sort of a minimum wage, and then you know the counties can raise it or raise it accordingly, but not go below a certain level.
Well, if Montgomery and Prince George's County want to put themselves at a competitive disadvantage, they're more than welcome to do that. That's mm-hmm. exactly what they've done. And in fact, who knows? Maybe some people who live in my community, since I live 6 miles from the Montgomery County border, will now drive down to Damascus and all those places mm-hmm. to just get that extra dollar, $2 or $3 or $4 an hour. I don't know that that's necessarily a solution. By virtue of the fact that the federal government has set the minimum wage at $7.25, we already have that floor. So if that's his logic in trying to establish that, that's already been established. And yet there is tremendous political pressure in the Democrat Party to try to move this thing forward. Whether or not it solves the purported problem, in my opinion, having more people being able to work, even if it's at a lower wage job, is better than having someone sitting out there still waiting for work in any way, shape, or form.
Let me we'll talk politics in a few minutes, but some of the other things that are on the Senate caucus, Republican caucus agenda.
Well, we're certainly dealing with the rain tax. We mm-hmm. would love to see that revisited. That's something that I think is harmful across the state. While there has been, conversations about the so-called war on rural Maryland, that's tough to pronounce, but this is something that's even hit in Baltimore City that's been very punitive and problematic. And in fact, I think it's made the state kind of a bit of a laughingstock across the country. So that's one issue. We still have the deficit we talked about, from a budget point of view. Transportation issues. We still are going to see a tremendous need for transportation. I still disagree with the increase in the gas tax, particularly since the vast majority of the money goes to mass transit. Those type of systems, those transportation systems, should have been more self-sufficient from a regional perspective, and some of us had advocated for that to allow the regional transportation authorities. But it's possible now that this transportation task force is going to make some recommendations, and our expectation is that one of them might be to enforce more of a local authority, a local taxi increase on that, and take away highway user revenues. That's a major shift from how business has been done in the past. But we'll have to see exactly what solutions are offered.
I had a conversation with the MTA administrator a few weeks ago when they announced the expansion, and it took effect, the expansion of MARC service between Baltimore and Washington on the weekends. And one of the things that he said is that, they're going to see the ridership and everything like that. Perhaps they will expand it to the Camden line or to, which comes into your district, the Brunswick line. Wouldn't that, if they did that, isn't rural Maryland or at least Frederick County getting some benefit from the gas?
Well, I suppose if you made that argument, the challenge that we have with rail service in the Brunswick line and up into Frederick is not whether or not it's done on the weekend, and maybe there would be a corollary benefit to it. It's the lack that there's not a reliable hourly schedule to it. If someone,
constant delays.
Yeah, it's constant delays, but there's only 3 trains out in the morning, 3 trains back in the evening. And so a person who works down the road, let's assume that there's a child care mm-hmm. fiasco at home. Mm-hmm. Well, they have to wait until that, first train, and then it takes an hour and a half to get home. Were there a reliable schedule of an hour out and an hour back, not only would you see commuter traffic, it would be a tremendous boon even to the tourism traffic. People could park up in Frederick, have dinner or something in Frederick, take the train down to D.C., do their thing. That's the major impediment to it, not whether or not there's weekend service.
Okay. Let's talk a few politics. Now, you talked about how the redistricting is going to be taking effect. You also have some members of your caucus running for other offices, Senator Glassman running for Harford County Executive, Senator Kittleman running for Howard County Executive. Where do you see 2014 for the Republican caucus? Do you see any chance that the Republicans will gain seats?
Oh, I think that we have some pretty good opportunities on picking up seats. Certainly, your number one focus is to keep the seats that you already have.
Right.
There are certainly are some opportunities out there, I think, to pick up some additional seats. The issue becomes communication. Are we able to communicate the dissatisfaction of the voters? And more importantly, from our perspective and from my perspective, is can we field a candidate that people can feel comfortable with that is able to represent that area and communicate those concerns that we have.
Do you feel Maryland Republicans sort of get attached to the National Republican Party and a candidate or National Republican candidate might say something controversial? They're thinking David Brinkley or any of the other Republican candidates would be attached to that, and it's
I don't want to say
guilt by association, but maybe that's the
sometimes phrase. Sometimes there's a tendency to simplify some of the messages, and I think sometimes the press likes to go along with that. You know, they like to demonize, and that's something easy to do when you're a minority like we are from the voting point of view. But I think what is ignored in that, and this is where our challenge is to appeal to the voter who's disgusted on both sides,
mm-hmm.
and there's plenty of room for that.
Sure.
These so-called middle of the road voters. They're not happy with the rain tax, the gas tax increase, the income tax increase, and some of these other mechanisms that have taken place by the ruling party. But at the same time, have we been able to communicate an effective message? Senator Pipkin, when he was leader before,
yeah.
We tried to change the dialogue by offering an alternate budget. What was fascinating was we were demonized by the majority party. You want to cut this for children. You want to cut this in education. No, what we want to do is we want to handle the state's finances responsibly. It's one thing to throw bombs. It's one thing to criticize. It's another thing to offer a solution. And I have to admit, some of those things that we laid out there were actually adopted. They didn't necessarily, give attribution of responsibility to it. But the point is we have a responsibility to try to manage the state's resources and try to govern the state. To the extent that you can come up with some solutions to some real problems. That's what I think that our responsibility is, particularly as the minority.
Final question, just talking about the session. I had a number of your members, a number of members on the other side of the aisle, describe the 2013 session as frantic because you had a lot of major issues considered, the gas tax, the gun control measure, the death penalty repeal, among others. Do you expect this session to be calmer?
Well, let's just say that the nature of the battles will shift a little bit.
Okay.
They certainly would be around minimum wage. They certainly would be perhaps around some type of tax reform. Certainly the budget is a key. And again, with the election coming up, that could change a lot of what goes on with it. But by the same token, we're all challenged with trying to communicate a decent message forward. And trying to make sure that we can be representative of our areas. While I represent a certain area of the state, I still try to vote, and I think I do so responsibly from a statewide perspective. And that's the challenge for everybody.
Just going back to the ACA for a minute, do you expect just hearings or do you expect policy changes?
I would hope that we would have some policy changes, but we also have to get down to the bottom of what went wrong and why wasn't it communicated to everybody.
Can you do that in 90 days?
Well, yeah, we can move mountains in 90 days. We can put a gun prohibition in. We can raise gas taxes. We can raise the income tax. We can impose a rain tax. All in 90 days. I mean, Annapolis has proved it can do what it sets its mind to do. Whether or not they're good decisions or not, I think in time the laundry cleans some of that out. The political will is here. People talk about the AAA bond rating and they applaud themselves for it. Cato Institute came, and I'll never forget, Louis Goldstein was still alive. I was in the House of Delegates, and they sat, and Louis raised his hand and said, but we have a AAA bond rating. That's so wonderful for us. And the simple answer given was, well, that's only because you have the political will and the political wherewithal to raise taxes to protect the bondholders. That's all that means, period, end of story. And it was succinct.
Okay. Thank you very much.